Call the next case, please. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Gary Gillum. I represent Robert Barty, administrator of the estate of Tanya Michelle Begley, and co-counsel is Chad Wilson. The issue in this case is whether or not the right of survivorship applies to administrators in an estate. And in this medical malpractice wrongful death case, the decedent died intestate, and two administrators qualified to bring the wrongful death suit. One was Wiley Begley, the father of the deceased, and the other was Robert Barty, the husband of the deceased. Before suit was filed, Wiley Begley, who was older and in poor health, passed away. In the joint appendix on page 19 and 20, in the amended complaint, it shows that the attorneys for Robert Barty approached the clerk of the court and requested that the surviving administrator be reappointed as the sole administrator, and that the deceased administrator be severed. The clerk responded that the surviving administrator could serve and file a suit, did not have to do anything, and could act alone. Based upon that ruling, the plaintiff filed suit. In pleadings, the defendant, of course, we know, alleged that the surviving administrator cannot act alone and therefore lacked standing, and the court agreed. Let me be clear here.
There is no case law. Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
Basic question. After Addison v. Jurgelski, which came down shortly before you all argued this, why was standing even being argued?
I don't understand. Addison versus Jurgelski stands for the proposition, in my view, that there was standing of the administrator who had been appointed to bring the lawsuit. But the argument was that there should have been somehow a joint administration, rather than the surviving administrator having standing and pursuing the litigation. And the court agreed with that notion. There is a part of it, of course, Addison versus Jurgelski, that stands for the proposition that joint administrators should be joined, but of course in Addison, the joint administrators were both alive. And in this case, one of the joint administrators had passed away. And the court suggested in its ruling that that Wiley Begley, the deceased, could be made a party. And I didn't see how that could happen, that a deceased person could be made a party. A person couldn't have him, have his estate substitute for him as a party in the original testator's, or the original decedent's case. So I was in a position of where I was being invited to make a deceased person a party to a case, and I couldn't really do that. And again, we had gone to the clerk, and the clerk had said, you're okay to go. You're okay to file suit. You don't have to do anything else. You have somebody who's appointed, and you don't have to do anything else.
Well, counsel, going back to the standing issue, in Addison, the court said that the single administrator, single executor, had the ability to file the suit, to bring the suit, but not to maintain the suit. So they had standing to file the suit. but not to maintain it alone. Isn't there a distinction there?
Yes, I don't question that there is a distinction there, but also there's a distinction that, in this case, Wally Begley, the co-administrator, was deceased. And in that case, there was I didn't know how to make him a party with him being a deceased person, and his administrator wouldn't have been able to replace him.
Well, in under our statutes, it would have been possible, wouldn't it, if you would have asked the court or gone to the court and resigned your administration and then had you reappointed as the sole administrator?
I think that could have been available. I think I think that provides for very vexatious litigation in these circumstances, in that you have to go through a procedure that's not a part of a statute or a statutory scheme.
Well, under and I don't have it right in front of me, which I should have, but there is a provision for the court to allow resignation and reappointment, and there is a under the joiner of necessary parties allows a later appointment also, allows the clerk to do it.
Of course, if a new administrator is appointed, I allege that it doesn't relate back. Under the Abingdon Hospital case, Johnson Memorial Hospital case, the person there filed a lawsuit as administrator, had not yet become administrator, and then attempted later, after statute of limitations had run, to non-suit it after they became administrator and bring it back. And the court said it doesn't relate back if there's a new administrator, a new representative involved in the case.
But in that case, when the administrator originally brought the suit, the lawsuit, the administrator had not qualified and didn't have the authority to bring the lawsuit. In your case, the administrator had the authority to bring the lawsuit initially. So it isn't the same as Johnson. Wouldn't it be more like when, for example, a sole executor dies or the plaintiff, him or herself, dies and the estate is substituted for the plaintiff because they have died? Or if an executor dies and a subsequent one is appointed, it's just the substitution of the person. It's not as if the executor or the original plaintiff did not have authority to file the suit, as it was in the Johnson, in the hospital case.
Well, again, what I allege is that a person who comes into the case later is a new representative, and that would not relate back, and the original filing under those circumstances would be void.
Did the trial court rule that?
The trial court didn't rule that. The trial court suggested that I join the deceased co-administrator, and I didn't do that. First of all, one reason I didn't do that is because the clerk had said that there's this rule of survivorship, and I'm here depending on that. It may not work out, but that's the rule that I'm depending on.
Counsel, what helped me with what exactly the trial court did rule?
Well, trial court ruled,
well,
I think...
Let me ask my question first. Your assignments of error indicate that the trial court erred in finding that the doctrine of survivorship did not apply, first assignment of error, and then your second assignment, that the trial court erred to the extent it held that the general law relating to powers of appointment didn't apply. I'm not sure that the trial court ruled either of those things. As I understand the sequencing of events, the first demur and motion to abate were based on the standing issue. Court decides that issue. You attempt to get the clerk to reappoint or to take you off and put someone else on or put you back on. But then you file a motion to reconsider on the basis of survivorship. Trial court denies your motion to reconsider. You file an amended complaint. There's a new motion, a demur, and a motion to abate. And the statement of facts indicate that the ultimate decision was based on the same reasoning in the trial court's June 22nd letter, which was lack of standing. So did the trial court, long question to, long explanation to a short question, did the trial court make either of the rulings with regard to survivorship or general law?
Well, I think that the court denied my argument that survivorship should apply to administrators.
That denied your motion to reconsider.
Excuse me?
Is there a difference in denying your request that the court reconsider its earlier decision on that basis? The court said, I'm not going to reconsider my earlier decision.
I'd made that motion earlier and asked the court to rule that way earlier, and the court did not rule that way, and then I, in the motion to reconsider, I asked that the court consider consider survivorship of administrators again, and the court again decided not to to have survivorship of administrators.
Help me with the statement and the statement of facts that the court made its final decision for the same reason stated in the June 22nd letter. It's paragraph 19 on this date. The court granted defendant's motion to dismiss the amended complaint for reasons stated previously in the court's opinion letter dated June 22nd.
And I think that opinion letter was that the opinion letter was that
that you lacked standing.
The plaintiff lacked standing,
which is what Addison addressed.
Right.
That you don't lack standing to sue.
Right. That's what the court said. That, that of course, the standing issue is an issue that that cuts two ways. One is there's no question but that Robert Barthe had standing, but the court went on to say that the other co-administrator had to be joined in order for that standing to be sufficient. And I didn't know how to join the other co-administrator.
Well, counsel, let me ask you a question. Putting aside, and I'll tell you, the statute I was referring to is 64.2610, which allows the court to resign. You rely on survivorship, and you argue a lot in your brief about that it's the common law that an administrator has the same survivorship rights that an executor does. Where is that in the common law? I mean, the statute we cite is all talks about executors. The treatises refer to it talk about refer to statutes that deal with executors. Where in the common law of Virginia or of England, even in England, it was a statutory right, not a common law right? They're different entities. They arise differently, and we've always, along with the General Assembly, have treated executors and administrators often in different ways, and certainly our statutes do now. So where is the common law?
Well, I'm just relying on these secondary authorities for the fact that the secondary authorities say that executors and administrators have the right of survivorship.
But even the secondary authorities like Wilson, Harrison and so forth cite the statutes that only refer to executors. They don't cite any statute that refers to administrators. They make the statement. And our General Assembly has treated executors differently with regard to survivorship than administrators.
Well, I'm sorry.
I mean, I don't want to waste your time, but I'm just saying that's one of the concerns that I have. Even the Christian case referred to executors, not administrators. So that's my question.
Well, all I can say is that that the sites I have are sites that stand for the proposition that in the common law, both executors and administrators have the right of survivorship. And I don't know why I'm not finding that here.
Oh, go on with your argument.
Anyhow, and I was just going to say that in the common law, the half of the courts that dealt with, not king's courts, but ecclesiastical courts, they had what is called ratione officii, which means that they created an office. And that's what both administrators and executives have. And the rule under the common law has been that as the office survives, when somebody passes away who's an officer, so does the power. And that has been my argument all along, that that is the common law. I guess I can assure you that there is support for the proposition that the common law permits administrators to have survivorship rights.
Thank you, Ms. Gillum. Your time has expired.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Bill Eskridge. I'm a lawyer from Abingdon. I represent Dr. Peter Cruz, the appellee.
Mr. Eskridge,
yes.
Before you begin your argument, I really am troubled by how this case is dished up to us. And so I'd like to just go directly to my question, and then I'll be quiet and you can make your argument. We decided Addison v. Jurgelski in January of 2011.
Yes.
We could not have been more clear on the standing question. However, the circuit court based its dismissal upon the conclusions that Jerry did not have standing to sue on behalf of his decedent. That conclusion was error. An administrator is the only person with standing to sue. Jerry was not a plaintiff without statutory authority to act. Rather, the correct inquiry was whether Jerry could maintain the action solely or whether Shirley also was a necessary party plaintiff. That is precisely the issue that is before us here, although the facts otherwise are slightly different. A year later, you, as very experienced and capable and respected counsel, filed a motion to dismiss based upon standing. After we decided Addison v. Jurgelski, the judge, after hearing the argument, it is a letter opinion on June 22nd based solely upon standing, but gives this gentleman the opportunity to file an amended complaint. He goes to the clerk of the court, and the clerk of the court says survivorship. Now, clerk of the court may or may not have given him good advice on that. Don't know. But then you again file a motion to dismiss based solely upon standing. And then the judge ultimately says, well, I already ruled on this issue on June 22nd, and that's why I'm ruling again. That's it. That troubles me. Go ahead and respond.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what your question is, but let me...
I'm not sure either.
Let me see.
I'd like for you to respond.
Let me see if I can address it this way. I was counsel in Addison for the losing mm-hmm. party. I was counsel.
I know you're aware of this.
And while the court didn't use, this court did not use in its opinion in Addison the language that Justice Lacy referred to, but I accept her characterization. I think it's accurate as to the effect of this court's decision in Addison, which is that the one of the two co-administrators in Addison had standing to file the suit. So it was not a nullity, which is what I argued in Addison, and this court disagreed with that. But, as Justice Lacy puts it, one of the two co-administrators did not have standing to maintain the suit, to prosecute it. So the fact that one of the two had standing kept it from being a nullity, which is what I argued. And this court disagreed. But this court did rule in Addison that the second co-administrator had to be joined.
But that wasn't a standing question.
Well,
is your proposition that a party can have standing to sue and that without any further intervening facts, at some point thereafter, standing goes away?
I think that is the the consequence or the effect of this court's decision in Addison.
Other than Addison, and I disagree that that's the effect, because the remainder of Addison was not based upon standing, but other than Addison, do you have any authority for that proposition that standing, once determined, then simply disappears without any other intervening fact?
Well, no, I don't have no authority. I don't think that is, that's not what I'm saying. There is an intervening fact. The intervening fact is that one of the two co-administrators died.
That co-administrator was dead before the suit was filed, wasn't it?
Well, yes.
So that's not an intervening fact.
But for Addison, I would have argued that this case was a nullity because Barty, standing alone, had no right, even no standing, even to file, let alone to prosecute.
Addison, short. Where in Addison do you find the proposition that you have standing to file the suit, but that at some point in time thereafter, with no intervening fact, standing disappears? I don't see the word standing ever appearing again in Addison.
The language does.
And I wrote it. You argued it.
Right. The language does not appear in that form in Addison, but the court agreed in its opinion that you wrote in Addison that where there are two co-administrators, both must prosecute the suit.
Mm-hmm.
But the court also ruled that the second co-administrator, who had not joined initially, could be joined notwithstanding the expiration of statute of limitations based on 801-5, I believe it is,
Correct. That
says that parties may be added at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And this court ruled that abrogated or disposed of my statute of limitations argument.
Mm-hmm.
But
that wasn't based upon standing.
No, it wasn't. Well, but you read the two parts of the opinion together, one that I won and one on the issue I won on, the issue I lost on. It becomes a standing
question. Statutory authority issue.
Mr. Etheridge, I think the problem in this case is that you're conflating the necessary party doctrine and standing.
Mm-hmm.
And Justice Mims is getting right at it. Standing is standing is standing. He had standing, and he didn't lose it. But he might not have been, as Justice Lacey points out, able to prosecute, continue the claim without a necessary party being joined. Problem in this case is there is no necessary party to join because he's dead. So that's the dilemma that bothers me as much, or probably less than Justice Mims, given that he wrote Addison.
Your Honor, Mr. Gilliam is very much mistaken in suggesting this court and arguing this court that he had no remedy.
But no, the question is, did he have to avail himself of that remedy? If you have if there was a live co-administrator, he had to join him. Justice Mims for the court made that absolutely clear.
That's correct. And
there is no live administrator, co-administrator. And you can't join a dead person.
And consequently,
the necessary party doctrine is taken care of. They're not a necessary party. They're dead.
We never ask, as represented by Mr. Gilliam, that a dead person be joined as a co-plaintiff.
Well, that may or may not be so, but that doesn't respond to my position and my point, which is also Justice Mims' point. Standing is not the basis to dismiss this. Necessary party would be, but there isn't a necessary party to join because the person's dead.
What
this case is.
But Addison says that where you have two co-administrators, both must join in order to prosecute the case.
That's the problem. One's dead.
Is the distinction that perhaps Addison makes that may not have been clear below? Addison talks about filing a suit, suing, and maintaining a suit. Standing issue is filing and suing. And then Addison goes on to say because there are two live co-administrators, one can't proceed to prosecute the action. But the question that you placed before this trial court judge is the exact question that Addison answers. Jerry did not have standing to sue. Your language, both in your motion to abate and in your demur, did not have standing to sue, which Addison clearly says that conclusion was error. Standing to sue.
Perhaps it's a matter of semantics, but I read Addison to say And where there are two who are appointed, both must join in order to prosecute the case.
Join. That's a necessary party. That's not standing.
Okay. Then if, again, it's a matter of semantics, Your Honor. If whether you call it standing or whether you call it a necessary party who must be joined, the effect of Addison is the same. The trial court's ruling is the same under either semantical.
Well, Mr. Estridge, would you agree that if a person has died, there is no necessary party to be joined here?
Well, not until a co-administrator, a replacement or a substitute co-administrator is appointed. You can't join a dead person.
Why does there have to be two?
There didn't have to be two in the first instance. But under Addison, once you have two co-administrators and one of them dies, our position is that
well, that's your position, I know. But, I mean, when you've got two appointed and one dies, what principle or statute in Virginia law says that there has to be a replacement for the one who died in order for anything to go forward with regard to the role of that sole administrator?
Which is a different way of asking the question as to whether there is survivorship. And as Justice Lacy pointed out in her question, there is nothing in Virginia we can find, in statutory, in the appellate case law, any trial court case law, that suggests that the co-administrator, that when one of two co-administrators dies, that the survivor inherits or accedes to the right to administer the estate.
But why shouldn't that be the law?
Well, because we don't know why two co-administrators applied and were appointed in this case.
Isn't that a very different situation than a testator? You're not going to analogize it to a testator appointing.
No, because the testator can't control all this in the will.
I just want to know why he thinks that it's not, why it couldn't be, the one why this court couldn't say that there is survivorship in a dual administration situation.
I think you could. I think it would be doing violence to the statutory scheme. This, all these matters of administrators, executors, administration, such as highly regulated by statute in Virginia. I think that to find a right of survivorship, you're going to have to ignore the statute. You're going to have to ignore the statutory scheme, and you're going to have to ignore the statute that provides for survivorship in the case of executors, but is silent as to administrators, which under the normal rules of statutory interpretation means that if the legislature had expresses one, it excludes the other.
Well, counsel, now there is a significant distinction between executors and administrators, because if the testator said, "I wish to have two people," then that will be honored because that was the testator's wish. Here, you say, "Well, I don't know why there were two administrators," but. The policy that was expressed in Addison about why, when there are two, you must have two administrators by statute, you must have them both act, is so that one doesn't file suit in this county and another one doesn't file an identical suit in another county. That policy doesn't apply when one of them has died.
Well, that's one policy that has the effect that you suggest, but there are several possible reasons that the family, that is the father and the estranged husband of the deceased, qualified as co-administrators.
Indeed. And they, here we're going to talk standing.
No.
I think perhaps the family would have standing to come forward and say, we don't want only one. But your client is the alleged tortfeasor. Your client has no interest in protecting the family's wishes in that regard.
A defendant always has questioned the stand, not the stand.
But
a defendant always has the right to determine whether the party or person suing him has authority or standing. That's always a valid inquiry and a valid defense if the plaintiff does not have standing.
Absolutely. And when there were two administrators and only one sued, you absolutely had the right to come into court and say only one of them has sued me. But once the court determined that the other administrator had died, what is your client's interest as the alleged tortfeasor in saying, oh, no, I insist that somebody replace the dead person?
Well, Your Honor, it goes back to a question we don't know the answer to, which is why the family had two administrators appointed in the first place.
But, counsel, what is your interest in having that question answered? It's the family's interest that should come forward to say, would rather have two.
Your Honor, as I read Addison, and I know you wrote the opinion, you may have a different interpretation of it, but as I read Addison, it was necessary, once two co-administrators were appointed, that in order to prosecute this case, the Barkey case,
and that was,
there has to be a co-administrator.
Well, that's where we started.
Go ahead. Let me just ask you a quick question. Why, you're saying they had to have two. Why couldn't Mr. Barty resign and have a single administrator appointed
to prosecute the case? Opinion in the Bowling against Diamato case, that court gave somebody respite. I don't think the resignation would have been necessary. I think that he could have gone to the clerk or to the court and said we need a substitute or a new co-administrator appointed.
But wouldn't that have violated the principle that the court never forces a joint administration? If he had to go in and ask that they appoint another co-administrator, doesn't that violate that rule, that principle of law?
If I don't think so, but if you think that it does, then his remedy would have been what Justice Lacey just said.
And wouldn't that be a useless act? He was already the sole surviving administrator. He's going to go to the clerk and ask the clerk to reappoint him as the sole surviving administrator?
Well, under this court's suggestion or decision in the Bowling against the Amato case, which is cited in one of our briefs somewhere, that would have been a remedy.
Well, no, Bowling was trying to appoint a co-administrator where there was only one to begin with.
Correct. But in the course of this court's opinion in Bowling, which was written by Justice Compton, I believe, that was suggested as a remedy that if the original administrator had resigned, then the court could have reappointed the original administrator and the stepson as co-administrators.
Okay. Thank you. I think your time has expired, Mr. Estridge.
Okay, thank you.
The court will take a short recess.
All right.